show for you today, we'll be discussing all the recent upsets in college basketball, as well as the NBA trade deadline that is imminent. We also have a fan question discussing the Boston Celtics. So we'll get started very soon. How you doing, Bobby?
I'm doing fantastic, Adam. You know, just living the dream over here, enjoying a nice weekend of college basketball, and trying to digest as many of the reported NBA rumors as possible.
Oh, fantastic. Looking forward to talking about all this stuff with you. And to get everything all started, we recently just saw the Oklahoma Sooners take down the Kansas Jayhawks today, that being Saturday, February 9th, 2013. And this week, number one, Indiana fell. And number two, Florida fell. And number three, Michigan fell on Saturday after seeing number one and two drop their games earlier in the week. So what's going on with college basketball, and what do you see happening this year?
Well, I think what's most noticeable about this season is the fact that there's not an elite team. You know, usually there's a couple. Now, instead, the gap between the top teams in the NCAA and the mid-tier level talent is noticeably it's a much shorter gap between those two levels of talent. And what this means is there's going to be a lot of quote-unquote upsets throughout the season that it's resulted in this carousel at the top spot, this revolving door, and that the national championship is up for grabs, maybe more so than ever this season.
What's really interesting is recently we've seen so many Cinderellas get to the Final Four, you know, in VCU and especially Butler recently. So we've seen a lot of these teams just come out of nowhere, and I think this has been a trend that will culminate in the 2013 March Madness and Final Four, and it might continue going forward. The reason that we've seen all this is that all the talent is not as good as it used to be. We're not in the day of Magic Johnson and Larry Bird leading their teams. We're not in the day of dominant players staying for more than 1 year or even developing into important and strong players on their teams. The college basketball game is at one of its worst products maybe in history because scoring is much farther down than it has been in the past, and we just are not seeing as good of a product as we have in college basketball. And we always know that the NBA is the better game and better players playing the game, and you still see the same heart from these college basketball players, but the talent level is just so low that it's a lower level and a lower brand, so that's why we're seeing that carousel, as you said.
Yeah, Jay Billis recently gave his take on the state of college basketball, and in his opinion, the NCAA is more physical than the NBA. Not to say that players who are less developed are, you know, in terms of their bodies and physically, are stronger or anything of that nature, just that the game itself is a more physical game because players are being taught now to foul with their bodies. Their hands are straight up, but they are hitting guys hard with their body, which changes the trajectory of the shot. It ultimately impacts scoring and guys wanting to go to the basket and how strong they take it to the hole. And so as a result, you have these very physical games, guys getting banged all the time, and referees in a very tough position of, do we call it? Do we give that leeway? And it results in lower scoring games that are still hard-fought contest, but not as high scoring and a little bit less entertaining.
Yeah, and I was going to touch on the referees. They always let more go in college than in the pros. You know, the tic-tac fouls, we seem to see a lot more in the higher ranks, the professional ranks, than we do in Division I and the rest of the divisions of college, and even in high school. You know, these refs seem to be, you know, letting a lot more go. We always, we often see in you know, college basketball, that block charge call is not even called when you see that double contact underneath the hoop, as opposed to in the NBA where you always, 100% or 99.9% of the time, you see that contact call underneath the hoop in the NBA. So it really is a product of the college basketball coaches working around the college basketball refs, and they understand that they're not looking at the best refs in the world, they're looking at maybe the second best group of refs in the world. And I think this next tier of referees, you're able to get by with those block charge calls, and you're able to keep your hands up and prevent the refs from, you know, figuring out that this body movement is not going to get called, and I think that they've been able to get around it.
I absolutely agree with that. Now, Adam, looking at the revolving door that's been the number one seed in the country this season, presumably Duke will be a Boston College team that has been putrid this season, and they will be the new number one in the country. But their next two games are at home against North Carolina, followed by on the road at Maryland. How long do you think Duke, assuming they beat Boston College, which given the way the season has gone, you know, very well may not occur, but if they do beat BC and become number one, how long do you think they remain in that spot before someone else claims it?
Well, you know what? I think you touched on it. You said that going into Maryland, the conference foe, the best team in the Division I in rebounding, I'm a little worried about them going into Maryland. That young, stout team might be able to win if Duke is not firing all cylinders from deep, because we know Krzyzewski's teams recently cannot play on the inside. All they have is Plumlee. And I think, you know, and they're still a little hobbled, a little injured, this Duke team. So I think they will fall in Maryland, and we'll see another new number one around that time after they fall in that game. So I think what we'll end up seeing going forward, though, is this Indiana Hoosiers club step up and get that overall number one seed heading into the tournament, or still fall off from there. What do you see happening?
Yeah, I definitely like Indiana's chances, but the UNC, who has not had a good season this year and most recently lost by 26 points in Miami, a game they looked terrible in, it's one of the most historic rivalries in all of sports. And I definitely think that team is going to come motivated to play at Cameron Indoor when they take on probably the number one team in the country, the Duke Blue Devils. And I wouldn't go looking at the Maryland game just yet, because I really think the Tar Heels have what it takes to win. Who am I going to pick in the game? I'll know as we get closer. Right now, at this point in time, I'm going to, of course, take Duke, like majority of people will. But given the historic nature of the rivalry and the history between the two teams, that's not to say UNC can't get it up and pull off the upset.
UNC is very strong overall in many of the overall statistics, which is nice to see them, you know, getting up there in points, rebounds, and assists. However, it seems like they haven't put together for a lot of the games this season. So it's unfortunate they've lost to the likes of Texas and UVA, you know, Miami, NC State. But it seems like a lot of their games on the road this season have occurred in losses. They're not that great of a road team this season. So I'm a little worried them going into Cameron Indoor, although we know that that they're able to, behind Roy Williams, go in there with some savvy and some confidence. So I think you're going to see a closer game than maybe the point spread will be. But the Duke Blue Devils should be able to come out with that. But you are correct. Duke cannot be passed. Cannot be looking by. We can look as far as we can in the future, but teams, of course, cannot be looking to a game in the future.
Exactly. They got to keep their eyes on the now and who's up next. And the three teams to me, despite what's gone on with them recently, that impress me the most, that I think will be the strongest come tournament time, are, and this is going in order, Indiana. To me, they appear to be the best team in the country, followed by Michigan, who the play of Trey Burks is sensational, the likes of Hardaway Jr. and everyone else on that squad. It's a deep team with a lot of athleticism, a lot of scoring. And then I look at Kansas, who, despite these three losses, I think this is going to be one of those moments that makes them stronger. I think they're going to build off this, and I expect them come tournament time to be one of the best teams.
It seems like that third team is such a wild card because no matter what team you put in that slot, it seems like they have a major weakness, whether it be Duke, whether it be any of the other teams that you want to put in there, you know, Florida, Arizona, Gonzaga, even Michigan State, or even Syracuse, where you currently reside. It's unfortunate that that third team seems to be very, very weak, or it seems like, in comparison to Indiana, Michigan, Michigan. But I did have a note on Trey Burke that I saw recently. ESPN Stats and Info tweeted that Trey Burke is on pace to be the first Big Ten player since Magic Johnson, 1979, to average 17 points and 7 assists per game. So, you know, look for him to really step it up. I think it's those Indiana Hoosiers, Michigan Wolverines, and everybody else.
That is an incredibly impressive statistic right there that you just mentioned. And I do completely agree, cutting it off after those two. And so you can say that the level of overall talent in the NCAA is not as high as it typically is. And you can also look at that as meaning there's a greater parity in the league, and that March Madness and the regular season, you might not be looking at two teams of as high a caliber as you're used to watching, but you're looking at two teams that are pretty even.
And if the NCAA wants to close games to get them even more ratings in March Madness, I think March Madness will be even crazier this year, and it will not disappoint.
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Bobby and Adam. A lot of news coming out around the NBA trade deadline, as always. We most recently have heard names such as Eric Gordon, J.J. Redick, Paul Millsap, and Al Jefferson out in Utah among the many names discussed and rumored to potentially be on the move. Now, Atlanta has reportedly told Josh Smith that they're not going to offer him a max contract. They don't see him as a max contract player. And that has sources around the league putting it at a 60% chance that Jace move is moved by February 21st. Adam, what do you think the future holds for Josh Smith? And do you think he finishes out the season in Atlanta?
First off, I want to give you some great wordplay right there. That was fantastic. Nice job with the smooth and the move. I love that one.
Thank you. Felt like Walt Frazier a little bit.
Yes, yes. The up-and-coming white. Yes. Fantastic. And as far as Josh Smith goes, it's kind of frustrating to see a player of this caliber and this talent not being at his full potential. And I still think, very similar to Rondo, these guys are not at their full potential yet. And Josh Smith at his best is definitely a max contract player. If Joe Johnson's a max contract player, then Josh Smith at his best or at his finest is definitely. And the Hawks are now under a management, the Danny Ferry, that understands what they're doing and are making smart decisions. They first made that trade with the Brooklyn Nets. That's the first step. The next step is getting rid of Josh Smith. He is not going to figure this stuff out with the Hawks. It's just not going to happen. It's been too many years already. I can't see him staying around for another year. It's already been, you know, quite a few years. He started in 2004-05. He's played, you know, he's played a lot of games in his career. There's up to 646 coming into Saturday night. And, you know, I just don't see him staying with them because he is not that good. He's still settling for the outside shot. He's going to need a fresh scene, a fresh place to go to. And I had mentioned it a few weeks ago. Why not go to Phoenix? Bring back some great pieces for Atlanta. Marcin Gortat, Jared Dudley, and a draft pick for Josh Smith. That's the trade that I was thinking about. Bobby reminded me while we were talking during the break. And, you know, it's a great trade for both teams. And I think it gives Josh Smith that new scenery. It gives maybe this son's a star if he can get up that max contract level, and I think they will get him that contract. Why not? And then the Hawks get some more pieces in return and have a chance at making a splash for the next few years in the playoffs.
Adam, I give you all the props in the world for coming up with that trade, which definitely complements and works out for both sides. But then I take all those props away for what you just said about Josh Smith not being that good. We're talking about an all-star who is potentially first-team all-defense, gives you about 16 points a night, and double-digit rebounding. Now, he has a horrible shot selection and an attitude that can certainly be compared to Rondo's. But in terms of on-court talent, even with that shot selection, he still gets it done at a all-star level. Very good player. For Phoenix, the concern is, what is his attitude going to be like on a team that is still lacking direction with just Josh Smith? They got to bring in other players of that same B+, A-minus, top-tier talent around Smith, and they got to be able to do it soon because his attitude and his presence in that locker room is only going to get worse the longer they go without those additions.
See, the problem here is, and I completely understand, and a very well played pair would be props, giving it I think the idea here is that the reason why I don't call him that good is because he hasn't pushed the Hawks to another level. A player in my mind that can push a team to new heights is not a Carmelo Anthony, is not, you know, the guys who can't get out of the first round or out of the second round, you know, can't make it further in the playoffs. It's kind of pathetic that he hasn't been able to lead this Hawks team further than what they've done. They can't even make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Dwight Howard behind shooters in Orlando. LeBron's in it by himself in Cleveland when he has nothing. Josh Smith needs to be a superstar that takes charge, and he has yet to in Atlanta, and I think that's the reason why his time is up there. You're completely right about him being a nuisance in the locker room because of that terrible attitude. And I think the reason why I've called him, maybe he's great, but he's not championship great. And maybe he needs a new change, maybe a restart in Phoenix. And I think that would be nice for him.
Josh Smith is not Dwight Howard or LeBron James or Carmelo Anthony, but that doesn't mean he's not good. You know, like you said there at the end, very good player. He's an all-star, and believe me, every team in the league could use another all-star. And for Phoenix to give up two good role players, especially Jared Dudley, who's expanded his game this season and is a player who appears to be on the rise, plus a first-round pick, that does a lot for Phoenix to only have to give up that to get Josh Smith. And then you look at it from Atlanta's perspective, they still would have a lot of cap space. Gortat and Dudley respectively make $7 and $4 million a season. So they still would have a lot of that cap space left that they covet. That was the whole point of Joe Johnson and Marvin Williams being moved over the summer. And they could go out and sign big-name players and now have two very good role players already in place.
And you know who I'm thinking Dwight Howard. He's going home to Atlanta. Unfortunately, these back issues or these shoulder issues or whatever issues, his entire body is dead. He is hurting this year. He, for his future, needs the surgery, needs to sit down, put himself in a better position, stop listening to Kobe, and give himself what the doctors are saying and give himself some rest. Finish this year off right and not play another game because he is just hurting his own options going forward. And I think any future team, kind of like that with CeCe Sabathia out in Milwaukee, when they pitched him on like 2 days rest for, felt like, a few months, they were burning his oil. They were hurting him for the future years. And I think the Yankees will see that soon. But that's beside the point. I think if the Lakers run down Dwight this season, his career could change for the much worse. Could be changed in a crazy, terrible way if he doesn't get off the court soon, because he is getting fouled so often and playing so physical with him that his body can't take it. Referees they're allowing teams to hurt him because he's so strong and so imposing. I think that's the reason that he's always been fouled so much and, part of so much contact in his career. If he is not looking good at the end of this season, the reason will be because Kobe egged him on and the Lakers organization was not smart about it.
People cite his back injury and various other ailments, but he doesn't get enough credit for playing through the severity of that back injury that was really quite grueling and took a huge toll on him and continues to, because he's nowhere near 100%. And just like you said, he has such a physique to him that these guys are hitting him and playing physical with him, and it's either let go or downplayed and not really looked at. But these are still big guys, strong guys, hitting him and hitting him hard. And that absolutely has a wear and tear effect on Dwight Howard that unfortunately is showing itself while he's still such a young player, still growing in many ways, especially at the offensive end. And this, no doubt, is going to impede his growth.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that, a guy of his talent, and he's just so good, and he's so unique, really. I've not seen many players like him in NBA history, and, he kind of hurt himself with all that loyalty talk in Orlando, because you knew he was gone. You knew he was not coming back to Orlando, and he sat on the sidelines, made it all a joke. I think that's why he's not getting as much sympathy as he could have gotten going out to L.A. If he was still doing this in Orlando as a Magic player and as a team player with Stan Van Gundy still in Orlando, if he didn't create all that stuff, I think he would have gotten a little more sympathy. The problem now is he made this situation and he hurt it. He made it terrible. He will still get along with him, no matter where he goes, no matter where he's traded, no matter where or what happens to him. But the problem now becomes, does anybody really think that they want to take on that burden? But I think it's worth it. It's got to be worth it. A guy like this, who has made the Lakers a significantly better defensive team when he's on the floor as opposed to when he's off.
Adam, I look at the Lakers, who they don't want to fire Mike D'Antoni, period. That's not right now, this season, that's period. They don't want to fire Mike D'Antoni and have to pay him the rest of the contract and bring in another coach. And D'Antoni really doesn't utilize Dwight Howard in the proper way. So while in my heart of hearts, I have a hard time picturing Dwight Howard leaving Los Angeles, why not a sign and trade over the summer? Josh Smith for Dwight Howard.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy. That is like, it's crazy in the way that I never thought about it, but possible in the way that, why not? It's exactly what both teams would want. Antoine Jamerson is not a player that the Lakers are going to covet for years to come.
I don't know if he has years to come left.
He might not be in the league for anything more than like 12 to 13 seasons. That's what he is.
This very well may be his last season.
He can't move. We'll see. If the Lakers need more depth next year, other than their four-player roster this year, then I think they may need him. So, it'd be very funny, but Josh Smith would be a huge help, especially with Kobe at the end of his career. Add him in there with Pau Gasol, and, that would be fantastic. And, Nash is there. Wow. I like it. Why not do it? You have to wait until the end of the season. Would that be the best time to do it?
I don't know if the Lakers are going to move Howard at the trade deadline and not even give this team, as currently comprised, at least one run at a postseason. Now, they might not make it. They're not in the playoffs as of right now. But I'd be surprised if Dwight Howard doesn't get a run at a postseason in Los Angeles.
Yeah, Here's to his vulnerable in the eighth spot, but it's so tough to make the playoffs. I doubt Portland will be able to make a push, even though they're in the ninth seed as of podcast recording. But you know, the Lakers are still close, and you know they've won a lot of games recently. They played well, had a huge comeback against the Bobcats on Friday, and then go into Miami on Sunday to prove a point. But you saw them get absolutely massacred on Thursday against the Celtics. You know, of course, as Boston fans, we were extremely happy to see it, but we saw so many problems with that team. If Kobe's the only offensive option, is this team going to even have a chance to play out? Like, Gasol is a huge difference maker. And, you know, we know that Dwight and Powell get to coexist on the floor together, and that's a problem because Bynum and Gasol actually found something near the end of the last year and the year before that. It felt like they were coming together, and they won a few championships. So, you know, it's not a huge thing. You know, it was definitely nice to have those guys. And then switching them up, Bynum and Howard, now has created so much problem for the Lakers. And that's why I wouldn't mind even seeing the trade now, because I could see them sneaking in, but after that? You would be happy with the eighth spot and hoping to push Oklahoma City Thunder to, or the Spurs to six games?
Well, you got to believe that this is still, in terms of talent, one of the most talented rosters in the Western Conference. And so it's
talented starting lineup, not talented roster.
Okay, absolutely. And you got to believe, though, that even though it's not an ideal path, the potential for them going through Oklahoma City or San Antonio early still exists.
Interesting. I think you're holding out more hope than I am, and that's why, you know, I'll definitely give the Lakers. Unfortunately, the Lakers were my one of my finals picks to make it there at the beginning of the season. So I'm a little, I'm kind of going against that now, but I just don't see them ever being able to win a series against any of the teams that are currently in the playoffs. So, or even be able to make it, let alone. So, I guess you can let it go. You can let them play a few more weeks. If they pull off another 7-3, you know, 10-game stretch, you know, maybe you rethink the idea of making any trades. But I think the Lakers might want to try to be buyers if they want to appease Howard going forward. But if they don't, you're going to have to be sellers. And I just don't – I think you pack it in if you don't want to keep Howard.
Interesting. I think they pretty much have a choice to make, because I believe Gasol and Howard can play together. It's that they cannot play together in Mike D'Antoni's system. And so I believe they have to choose between coach and superstar. And that getting rid of Mike D'Antoni and biting that financial bullet is enough to appease Howard and talk him into staying.
Who you bring in then, Jeff Van Gundy?
The first name that has to come to everyone's mind is Phil Jackson. Would Phil come back to the Lakers? Would Jim Buss reach out? And, you know, Phil might make him get on his hands and knees and beg and admit he was sorry. But he's the first name that comes to mind. Jeff Van Gundy would no doubt be an excellent hire. There's a lot of good coaches out there. A guy that I would love to see happen, this is pure fantasy. This won't happen. I'm not suggesting it, but I would love to see it happen, is the Lakers, just as they did around the first time that they lost Phil Jackson, make a plea to Mike Krzyzewski to come.
Oh, that would be cool. That would be so cool. I think, you know, Krzyzewski's pretty much said that, you know, of course, college is for him, and the Duke Blue Devils and the USA team are the extent of his pro coaching. You know, going into the Olympics and those international games. But that'd be so much fun. Like, that would just add so much to the proceedings. And I would really look forward to a Krzyzewski-led Lakers. But, you know, it's going to be a weird situation. The Lakers just cannot succeed defensively under D'Antoni, and we agree on that point. So, D'Antoni out, Howard in? Maybe that's the question.
I think how can that not be the answer? And the only reason it wouldn't be is money. You're the Los Angeles Lakers. Spend. It's worth it. That Paul Pierce deserves to retire, having only played for the Boston Celtics. I don't care about the consequences that might come with that decision. I want number 34 to be hanging from the garden rafters and him to have never donned a jersey besides the green and white. Kevin Garnett, he revitalized the Celtics franchise. He revitalized a number of major people in the organization and helped raise Banner 17. I want him to retire a Celtic. Now let's keep in mind that even though the Clippers most recently were a team mentioned and linked to Garnett, that he has a no-trade clause and a large contract. I don't know how appealing he is to many teams around the league. And I don't know how large or small the list is for teams that would line up to trade for Garnett. Now, of course, you think the impact he can have on your team, how could you not? But it's not our money, and we don't get to make these decisions, and they're not purely made from a basketball standpoint. There's financial implications and what have you. I think both of them will finish their careers in Boston. I don't see either one getting moved for those combinations of reasons, including Ainge not wanting to part with either of his two superstars.
Yeah, and I agree about the Paul Pierce situation. I also think Kevin Garnett will have his number up there along with the Celtic greats hanging high above TD Garden for all that he did. At the Boston Celtics, he just eclipsed 25,000 points for his career, becoming the 16th player in NBA history to do so. The Garnets have done so much for this franchise. Paul Pierce also went through the dog days of the Boston Celtics. Before Garnett and Allen were in Boston, we saw the likes of Allen Ray, of Sebastian Telfair manning this team, and they went with those are some bad days. I think they set the 18-game losing streak. They had that. So Pierce deserves it. I like that way of describing it. And you know what? This team is not that bad with both those guys here. Keep in mind, they both averaged 17.5 points per game since Rondo has gone down in those six games. Pierce is also very close to averaging a double-double. His career highs around 7 rebounds per game for a season and about 5 assists per game in the season. Pierce is up to 9.5 rebounds per game in those 6 games, up to about 6 assists per game in those 6 games. This is impressive. Pierce, I didn't know he had this in it for, even a 6-game stretch. So, they're going to put more on the shoulders. They are. But this Celtics team is playing a lot better now. Going into their game with Denver against TD Garden on Sunday night, I'm looking forward to watching this team the rest of the season. They are a very hot team right now and could be moving up these Eastern Conference standings to put themselves in an okay position to give themselves a puncher's chance for playoffs.
The Celtics, since the beginning of January, have an opponent field goal percentage of 42% and an opponent three-point percentage of 30%. Both are right around tops in the league. Adam, these are fantastic stats if you're a Celtics fan, and they're often indicators of who NBA champions are. Now, I'm not saying the Celtics are going to win or even make the NBA Finals. But I am saying these statistics usually are a good way of figuring out who's going to be there at the end. And maybe this gritty Celtics team finds a way to go a little bit further than most expected.
Yeah, the Celtics this year are looking at arguably their best defensive lineups now. And the only team to have a better field goal percentage this season in comparison to that 42% you just mentioned is the Indiana Pacers at 41.9. So they're the only ones who have surpassed them as far as the full season in comparison to this new age, you know, at this new age Celtics team. And I just recently released a post on Celtics Hub about this recent streak. And I have looked up this Elias stat, and they had talked about this Celtics bench stepping up. Jason Terry, Jeff Green, I know Courtney Lee was coming off the bench at one point because he was helping out the bench in January. But Jason Terry, Jeff Green, and the likes, and Andrew Barbosa, and everybody else, it's huge. They have now had 5 different games in this 2 month span, or this 1 month and 1.5 month span, of having at least 3 guys scoring at least 12 points off the bench. So that is for the Celtics, 3 reserves scoring at least 12 points in 5 different games. And Elias said in the previous 4 calendar years, 2004 to 2012, they had done it once combined, overall. So the bench is stepping up without Rondo and without Sullinger. I know Sullinger is a huge difference. But this Celtics team is now 6 points better with Rondo off the floor as they are with him on. 6 points. And this is no small sample size. They are going to surpass 1,000 minutes this season without Rondo on Sunday against the Nuggets. So, you know, they're great. That's the way to go for it. And I think they have a chance against some opponents. We just don't know if they're going to be able to outlast 3 different Eastern Conference opponents en route to a championship appearance.
Right. The reason why most understand that the offense might be better right now, but long-term prospects, this team is not better without Rondo, is because short-term and in the present, the ball movement is much better. Someone gets a rebound, they're not trying to find Rondo, they're just trying to get it up the floor as quickly as possible. Everyone's touching the ball and involved in the offense, which does a lot of goodwill towards all areas of a game. And there's better spacing on the court. Guys are not sagging off of Rondo. And as a result, because Rondo's not in to do that too, it opens up lanes for Pierce as well as everyone else. It makes life easier for Kevin Garnett down low. And there's much more movement. It's more of a motion offense where guys catch it, they move it, and they themselves move. It's not as much of a stagnant offense, although we do still see that at times. In the long term, however, come playoffs, it's going to be easier for teams to implement strategies because the Celtics are playing not as dynamic a style of offense as when Rondo, despite his heavy ball handling, creates open looks for guys. And it's very difficult to defend because you don't know what's coming, no matter how much film or what strategy you implement. You don't know what's coming in the moment. And so a lot of planning ahead and strategizing can be done to counter the Celtics' motion offense that they're relying on right now, which is why in a series, they're probably not going to have as much success. But it is, as you mentioned, a significant sample size right now. And definitely is something that's noteworthy.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun to see the Celtics team continue to play. They have the depth. They may not have the front court depth. We may have to see Robin Lopez trade, like you had mentioned in the previous weeks. Like, that might help. But for now, they're not that bad. They're good. They're a very solid team, and a lot of players are looking a lot more comfortable than I thought they were going to look. And I think that's really because they're able to touch the ball more often, and these guards are succeeding at it, especially Courtney Lee, especially Andrew Bogosa, especially Jason Perry. So it's great to see. I'm looking forward to the rest of this season.
That about wraps up this week's podcast. Nicola, I hope we thoroughly answered your question. I also hope you're satisfied with the answer. Make sure to check out Adam's work that he mentioned on Celtics Hub, as well as the Keys to the Game on Celtic Nation for tomorrow night's contest in Denver, or in Boston against Denver, rather. I also do the Keys to Every Game. So following those shameless plugs, that about wraps up the show. You can find me on Twitter at Bobby_K91. And for Adam?
You can follow me at @StatsAdam. And those Keys to the Game, Bobby, are always fantastic. Always give those a read, because you can always figure out what exactly the Celtics need to do to succeed and hope to move their winning streak to a season-high 7 straight games this Sunday at TD Garden. Hope everybody has a fantastic rest of the weekend. And enjoy, guys.